This is Kevin Conroy,
the voice of Batman.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Gotham City is out of control.
An entire city screaming in fear.
Supervillains walk the streets, preying on the innocent.
They will learn the true nature of harm.
The police are powerless. A creature prowls this urban wasteland.
Who's that?
He moves in darkness. For some, he is a rumor. A name whispered in the corridors of the underworld, waiting for the chance to strike. Let every criminal know the acid taste of fear.
You crazy!
Bat! Giant bat!
Gotham has forgotten what justice means. The Dark Knight is here to remind them. Batman. Good guys wear black.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 246 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal. With me, our other host, my good friend, my good brother, the man that runs our Twitter account. He's a year older now. He's so much wiser, but he's still the best part of the podcast, in my opinion. It's Liam. Liam, welcome to a new month and a return to where it all began for us, where it all began for the DCAU, where our love of Batman began. So many things began with this show. We are once again returning to Batman, the animated series here in the month of February.
We got a as we do with Batman, with all the associated Batman shows, we review them in order, in production order in particular for Batman the Animated Series. And man, we're just hitting a stretch of just some all-time home run, very memorable episodes that we'll get to talk about in our next few stays in Gotham City. And maybe none more famous or more memorable than the one we're talking about today, which is, of course, the episode Trial.
That is right. I think, you have your standouts, the things that the episodes that people remember that stand out for good reason, and monumental episodes. This one has a lot of memories for a lot of good reasons, and probably stands out to a lot of people for just the sheer amount of the rogues gallery that is represented here in this episode. We have a lot to talk about, so we'll get right to our official IMDb synopsis for this episode, which originally debuted here in the States on the Fox Kids Network. I guess it's Fox Network with Fox Kids programming block on May the 16th, 1994, which means we are coming up here just a few short months, if you're listening to this in the original broadcast, at least, on the 29-year anniversary of this episode's original debut. And of course, before we get to the IMDb synopsis, it is, of course, brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower, and you can get our entire catalog of episodes, including every Batman the Animated Series review that we've done to date, as well as all of our other bonus episodes and other reviews as well. Not only that, but you get some great content from other DCAU content creators as well. Let's get the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Trial, which was written by Paul Dini and Bruce Timm. Never heard of him. Ooh. Directed by Dan Reba, with music by Harvey Cohen and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. A district attorney who loathes Batman is forced to defend him in a twisted parody of a trial run by the inmates of Arkham Asylum, who have seized control, taken them both prisoner.
Hmm. I mean, that's a pretty strong. I like that one. That might be an A.
That's very good.
It's good. It gives you a little cliffhanger action there. It feels intense. Perfectly describes the plot. Doesn't describe a different episode on accident, as we've done in the past. As far as IMDb synopses go, I give that one an A. That's well done.
I agree. Yeah, I think that Is that our first ever A? Since we've been unofficially grading these synopses?
I dare say probably.
Somebody who listens to this show, let us know if we've ever given an IMDb synopsis an A before.
That's right. Absolutely. But yeah, we'll get into our review of the plot, of course, for this week's episode. We start off on a scene. We have one Pamela Isley being sentenced by a judge. And he is in the same courtroom with one Janet Van Dorn, who we were first introduced to, I believe, during the Batgirl episode of Shadow of the Bat Part 1. So she is the new district attorney, having been elected since Harvey Dent was no longer capable of being the district attorney.
They've had a rough stretch between him and Arthur Reeves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a rough go of it, but thankfully they seem to have found a winner here in Miss Van Dorn.
Yeah, there we go. So Miss Van Dorn does state, or they, during this trial, the judge notes that they have built a successful case against Poison Ivy, or Miss Isley in this case, but because Batman was involved in the case, she is going to be remanded into custody of none other than, of course, Arkham Asylum. Batman being involved in the case is somewhat upset Miss Van Dorn, as she, in the very next scene, has a heart-to-heart with Commissioner Gordon, where she is exclaiming that every time that Batman puts his nose into the police business, he's unfortunately creating more trouble for the city. Police Commissioner Gordon happens to point out that it's a war zone out there, and Batman is the best weapon that the city has. She sees Batman as a drug for the city, and seems to be creating more issues and problems.
Strong words.
It's got to stop, Jim. As Gotham's new district attorney, I can't allow your pet nut to run loose in my city. I mean it.
Janet, it's a war zone out there, and Batman is our best weapon.
And I say he's a drug the city keeps taking to avoid facing reality. Speak of the devil.
The East Side Skulls are ready to declare war on the other gangs.
Old news. My department's already planning a sting to catch the Skulls' leader.
Don't bother.
Very cute, mister. You want to support law and order, you take off that mask and put on a uniform. You hear me, Batman? This is the last time! Next time I see him, it'll be a whole different story.
Wouldn't you know it? Speak of the devil and he shall appear. It is none other than Batman himself waiting outside. As Miss Van Dorn mentions that they had a sting set up to move in and capture one of the leaders of this gang in Gotham. And wouldn't you know it, Batman pulls up the window shade and happens to have the leader of the gang sitting right there, tied up in a nice little bow, as he's apt to do. And as he disappears out of the window and leaving the package there, Miss Van Dorn takes a Chekhov's batarang. at this moment, Batman leaves a batarang on this gang leader as he's tied up and hung up outside of Commissioner Gordon's office window. She takes the batarang, puts it away, and says that the next time she sees Batman, it'll be under very different circumstances. And that's sort of a wink and a nod to our very next scene, Liam, as Miss Van Dorn is having dinner with none other than Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, so this is an interesting, this is where we get into the minutia that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. This is where I do that anyway. I don't want to drag you in unwillingly.
No, but, this is what we do. This is what the podcast is.
But well, on this particular road, so it's established very quickly that Bruce and Janet know each other. Mm-hmm. It appears that this is a date.
I would agree.
So they have a pre-existing relationship. He immediately tries to, not the most subtle guy, he immediately goes to try to kind of prod her and ask her opinions of Batman. And
he clearly knows, because he just had this interaction with her.
Right. So he's trying to, and of course there was a clip of her on the news that's of her sort of, you know, loudly crusading. So he's immediately kind of going after her. Then she gets a phone call and is called away, and she disappears suddenly, and then Bruce sees the bat signal, and we're off to the races for our episode. But I just, this little interaction, I'm like, well, did they ever have a, what if this was a date, was there ever a second date? You know, just recently actually brought in the Adventures Continue season three just kicked off issue one that we just did an episode reviewing that comic, and had friend of the show Jordan Gibson on once again, the artist for that comic, so be sure to check that out in the archives if you haven't before. But I gotta wonder what happened. Was there ever another date? If this wasn't a date, why are they friends? Did they go to school together? Like, how do they know her, and why are they, you know,
I thought it was pretty clear based on Bruce's like leering, I guess is the word that I'm going to use, that when Miss Van Doren excuses herself, she gets a phone call at the table and she excuses herself. And there's like this shot that lingers on sort of over Bruce's shoulder, him clearly watching her walk away, which is uncomfortably long, but makes me think that that's what they were establishing there. Plus, Bruce got it. We don't have to talk about visuals now because it's so small, but Bruce got himself a brand new suit for this thing. Like,
he didn't
go brown and yellow. He didn't go Old Faithful in this one. He went out and got himself a brand new gray suit with a white button down shirt and tie. Something tells me he was interested in more than just her opinion on the Dark Knight.
Yeah, it's just, this would have been, I mean, obviously by the end of the episode, her opinions on Batman have changed, but it kind of would have been an interesting dynamic if this character was used more in, you know, she kind of the Lois Lane dynamic that he has in World's Finest, where she likes Bruce Wayne, but doesn't care for the other guy. I think there could be some fun stuff to play with there. So just, that was just like what I really zeroed in on more than all of the villains and the fun we had over these three acts. I'm like, what about this 30-second scene where it kind of seems like they're on a date? Let's let's really zero in on that.
Hello, Bruce.
Janet, I'm so glad we're able to meet on such short notice. It seems every place I look, there's our crusading DA leading the campaign to rid our city of Batman.
Oh, please. He's the last person I want to talk about tonight.
Oh, sorry. Still, even you have to admit, Batman's come through now and then.
But look at the lunatic fringe he's created. The Joker, Two-Face, Poison Ivy, and the rest. Batman's responsible for every one of them.
Excuse me, Miss Van Doren, but your office just called. They said it's an emergency.
I'm sorry, Bruce. I won't be a minute.
Take your time. Excuse me, have you seen Miss Van Doren?
Not in the last half hour, sir.
Look!
Must be trouble.
But yes, from there, that as Janet disappears from the restaurant, and after a certain amount of time, just as Bruce is sort of noticing that she's not coming back, he of course sees the bat signal in the sky and races off to find the source of it. And as he arrives at the top of, is this the top of the police station or the courthouse? Because it appears to be the same place that Janet was being interviewed earlier. Because we see that statue in the background.
I think this is the courthouse, because I think Batman meets Commissioner Gordon on the roof of the police department when the bat signal goes off. So this has to be,
that's right, yes,
a different location than that.
That's right. There's a letter. That's right. He goes to Gordon. There's like a ransom letter telling him to come to the courthouse. So he goes to the courthouse, and he sees a mysterious figure in the shadows, and in a real rookie move, just dives headfirst at him straight out of the opening, the theme song opening. There, he dives headfirst towards the person. But in fact, it is actually that very statue of justice wrapped up in a trench coat and hat. So as Batman is dazed and sort of trying to get his wits about him, we see a small dart shoot into his back, And as he turns around, we see that the what he thought was the Statue of Justice was in fact Poison Ivy in a very clever disguise. It must be a very lifelike statue for him to not have noticed this. Mm-hmm. And we see not only her, but Harley is there as well. And though he tries to fight a little bit, it's clear that the toxin from the dart has overwhelmed him. And we move there to really where the rest of our episode's going to take place, as Batman is in Arkham Asylum in a straitjacket there, and she's introduced to not only several of the inmates, but to Two-Face himself, making his grand entrance here, and he alerts her that they're going to have a trial, though the ultimate plan is to escape and wreak havoc on Gotham. First, they're going to have a trial with Two-Face acting as the prosecutor and Janet being asked to defend none other than Batman himself.
Let me out! Do you hear me? Whoever you are, let me out this second!
Welcome to Arkham, Van Dorn.
Two-Face?
Don't bother screaming for help. The white coats can't hear you. Matter of fact, they can't do much of anything, thanks to the Mad Hatter.
You're going to escape?
Eventually. We got some legal business to settle first.
What do you mean?
I'm talking about a trial. Me, the prosecutor. You, the defense. And your client.
And while she thinks this is ridiculous and that there's no way they're going to make it out alive, Batman tries to convince her to go on, telling her that whether or not it works or not, that this will buy them some time for him to try to figure out a way out of this. So we are set as we get to the courtroom, and we see just a sight. There's, you know, just swaths and swaths of inmates flooding the room, a lot of which are clearly designed on people that were. Oh, which we'll talk about certainly in visuals.
Mm-hmm.
But we have just a murderer's row. This is
I think literally in some cases literally
quite literal murderer's row. But you have working as the bailiff, you have Ventriloquist and Scarface, as mentioned, you have Two-Face as the prosecutor, the jury, Mad Hatter, Poison Ivy, Croc, Scarecrow, Riddler, and Harley Quinn, and then of course the judge is none other than the Joker, and it's very quick to the point where it's clear that Batman isn't exactly going to get a fair trial here. and the point that Two-Face is trying to drive home, this is really like a prototypical argument in like or any corner of the internet that talks about comic book stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Two-Face's claim, and Two-Face, and by extension, the rest of the villains here, claiming that they were all pure, innocent souls, and that Batman is who turned them into these monsters and criminals before them. And now Janet is going to be tasked with trying to defend Batman, even though she herself has been on television talking about how she believes that exact same thing. So you set up a very interesting dynamic here as we call the first witness, that being the Mad Hatter.
Yeah, it is as you mentioned, that's exactly what I had in my notes. It's like, it's the argument against Batman. It's Batman creates his own rogues gallery. Without them, without Batman, there would be no rogues gallery. It's a sort of cyclical thing that occurs because of Batman being involved and existing. Janet Van Dorn has bought into this same belief that he creates the villains. Without Batman there, they would not be who they are. And now she is responsible. Basically, her life is on her and Batman's life are on the line at this point, where she has to argue against that belief. So yes, we've set up a very interesting plot here, as we have the Mad Hatter on taking the stand first. He's both on the jury and the first witness. you have to love that. So Ms. Van Doren cuts to the quick and does not mince her words here. She gets right to it. She points out that that the Mad Hatter's origin stories revolve around of course Alice, as we know. Mad as a Hatter, the episode which you can hear in the archives at dcaureview.com or on your favorite podcast app if you wish to check it out. But so she recounts that she recalls his origin came about when he kidnapped a girl against her will. And we get some funny dialogue back and forth as she says, well, you know, how is that Batman's fault? And he says that Batman forced him to. And she very calmly and clearly points out he could have just left the woman alone and not bothered her. And and at which point the Mad Hatter exclaims that he's an incel and he would rather have killed her first, and sort of loses his cool, which is quite comedic. He then immediately shrinks down and turns to Judge Joker asking it to be stricken from the record, the last comment, to which the Joker responds, "Record? Is someone supposed to be writing this down?"
"Proceed, counselor."
"I suppose you, like your friends, claim that Batman drove you to be a criminal?"
"He did."
"And yet, as I recall your case, you brainwashed and kidnapped a woman who rejected you."
"Batman forced me to do it. He was going to take her away from me. I had no choice."
"You could have respected her wishes and left her alone."
"I'd have killed her first." "Oh, I'd like that last statement stricken from the record, please." "Record? Is someone supposed to be writing this down?"
"This is crazy."
"That's beside the point. Just keep it going."
And I cackled. This from here on out, it is clearly a Paul Dini written episode, because mm-hmm. there is so much hilarity infused and subtle and just, I mean, over the top humor, goofy dialogue written perfectly for the characters that are involved in this episode. But we then get our next witness on the stand. It's very clear that Batman isn't going to get a very clear fair trial here. But the next witness is also a member of the jury, and that's Harley, who is sporting Batman's utility belt and mm-hmm. Thanks Batman directly from the stand for creating the Joker. And without creating the Joker, she would not have the love of her life. To which D.A. Van Doren points out that while that may be true, that it's interesting because the Joker was the one who ratted her out the last time that she had broken out of prison and in order to swing a deal, to which, of course, she's very clearly working them against each other at that point. Harley begins to lose it and begins shaking the Joker violently. And at which point he says that the witness is excused and they have to basically pull her and drag her away.
"I object to this witness. She's obviously trying to influence the judge."
"What makes you say that?"
"Never mind. Do you have a statement?"
"I just want to say, if there was no Batman, there'd be no Joker, and I'd never have met my Puddin'. Thank you, Batman."
"Sad, isn't it? Harleen Quinzel was a doctor here at Arkham until the Joker twisted her mind."
"Ha! You're just jealous because you don't have a fella who's as loving and loyal to you as my Puddin' is to me."
"Uh-huh. And I suppose it was that same loyalty I saw the last time you escaped and Puddin' here finked on you in hopes of getting time off."
"Is that true, Puddin'?"
"Finked is such an ugly word."
"You lousy scum-sucking creep!"
"The witnesses excuse."
"Slimy rat!"
Yeah.
I love a kid's cartoon when this is, goes back to Looney Tunes, which again, not a surprise, this being a Paul Dini, or at least co-written script with Bruce Timm, where there's like, they can't swear, so they're just saying kind of gibberish as they're being dragged away. So Harley, you know, Croc pulls Harley off of her, and she's just like, ruffer, ruffer, ruffer. Like, right. She's not like the little dog from Wacky Races or right. something like that. Like, it's so funny. And it's so quirky. And like, we have these little vignettes versus, you said, with Mad Hatter and Harley. And then we get to the Poison Ivy one, which is, I think, is pretty darn funny as well, with Miss Van Dorn sort of pushing her buttons over her love of plants, pointing out that she has a near that in fact she loves plants more than people. Mm-hmm. And it also involves a very funny aside where Poison Ivy is barely trying to pretend, like she's kind of doing the charade, mm-hmm. but she's not really, to the point where she's like, yeah, Batman should have just let me kill Harvey Dent. Everyone would have been better off. And then it cuts to Two-Face, who is also doing the fake Looney Tunes cussing under his breath. It was just perfect, the comedy of that. But yes, and then to illustrate her point, Miss Van Dorn takes the flower off of the Joker's lapel and begins to pluck the flowers and pluck the petals off of it as Poison Ivy gets more and more agitated, to the point where she physically attacks Miss Van Dorn and has to be subdued once again. And during this, there's a couple of little cutaways where we see that Gordon and Montoya find this tracer device that Batman had left behind, but it's broken. And then he eventually they take it back to headquarters, where Gordon repairs it, and he sort of sees a general location, but he can't quite zero in on it. But he realizes that there's only really one place that they could be in this area of Gotham. The only thing out in that area is Arkham. So the cops are on their way, but it doesn't look like they're going to make it there in time, as we get our final verdict delivered by the Mad Hatter himself, who surprisingly, perhaps for the audience, if you've never seen this one, and certainly to Batman and Janet, they find Batman not guilty. Janet kind of gives this final, her closing arguments, that while Batman may have inspired the gimmickry of the villains of Gotham City, the over-the-top nature of some of their choices, in the end, that they all clearly were on these paths of self-destruction and violence long before Batman ever came to Gotham. And in fact, if anything, these sorts of people are what created Batman.
I used to believe Batman was responsible for you people. But now I see nearly everyone here would have ended up exactly the same, Batman or not. Oh, the gimmicks might be different, but you'd all be out there in some form or another bringing misery to Gotham. The truth is, you created him.
So it's a really cool twist on that. As we talked about, it's such like a prototypical argument about the character of Batman. Mm-hmm. And so for them to kind of take that argument head on, examine it, and then kind of spit it back in a way of where you can look at it and go, yes, actually, it's quite the opposite, in the sense that the over-the-top nature of the crimes of Gotham City are what caused the need for a Batman to arise. So I think that's a pretty fun bit. And as mentioned, as Mad Hatter delivers the verdict, he surprisingly finds Batman not guilty. They ultimately agree with the assessment that Miss Van Dorn has laid out, that that Batman is not the cause of all of their problems. But as Joker notes, that while that might in fact be true, because in the end of the day they're all violent sociopaths and monsters anyway, with or without Batman, even though they found him not guilty, they're going to kill both him and Miss Van Dorn anyway.
Your Honor, in light of Ms. Van Dorn's stirring defense, we have no choice but to find the defendant not guilty.
Oh,
children. Well done, Counselor. You've proven that Batman didn't create us. That we, in fact, messed up our own rotten lives. And as we are so rotten, vile, and depraved, we're going to waste you anyway. That's all, folks. Let's mambo!
And that sets up. It's mostly, it's pretty action-packed. There's not a lot of dialogue, but it does set up a really fun final act here, as it seems all hope is lost and the cops aren't going to get there in time, and Batman is strung up on one of those operating tables that they kind of push for, like the Hannibal Lecter thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you call those, but that you can kind of stand straight up, and it looks like the villains have him dead to right. But as you mentioned, Cal, Chekhov's Batarang returns as Miss Van Dorn remembers that she has that Batarang in her coat pocket. And right as Joker is about to pull the mask off of Batman and reveal his identity, she throws it and hits a bullseye, knocks the lights out, which allows Batman to escape. And now the fun begins. Now the fisticuffs begin, as we've got Batman still vastly outnumbered, but now with the lights out, things are a little bit more even.
And the next sequence, because they're in this room, is so fun. The lights are out. We get Two-Face pulling out a lighter to bring some light into the room. We get Tommy gun being used by the Joker, who's just shooting wildly into the crowd, not caring if he hits Killer Croc or or anyone else in the room. Harley at a point. Harley, by the way, gets strung up upside down, and now she is wearing the straitjacket that previously had been adorning Batman. So she is unable to speak and communicate other than a few muffled noises, as she is now the one who is restrained. But as I said, Joker just shooting wildly in the room. People are running about. Batman taking people out one by one. Killer Croc ends up getting shocked by this generator that the Joker had inadvertently shot as he was wildly shooting at Batman.
He's gone. Everyone spread out. Don't let him get away.
Who says I'm leaving?
What's going on?
Get the light.
Nobody panic.
Okay. Stop panicking.
It's at this point that Batman and the DA end up escaping sort of out a side door. And if we didn't mention it, I think you did mention it when we were talking about it, but the whole asylum has been taken over by this plan from the Mad Hatter, who placed his mind control cards on the various staff members there in some form or fashion. So all the inmates are out and about. So Batman's not scot-free at this point, as they begin running into these large groups of these nameless thugs that are free and running about in there. And so they have to sort of avoid this one crowd. They run up a set of steps. They run into the Scarecrow, who is sporting his scythe and is swinging it madly. They're trapped. Behind them comes the Ventriloquist and Poison Ivy, and so they're coming up the stairs at them. And of course, the Scarecrow swings his sickle, chopping the head off of the Scarface, which, as we've said in every sequence that possible, they did whatever they could to be as violent as possible towards Scarface. So Scarface is decapitated. His kappa was detained from the rest of his body. His head goes bouncing down the stairs, and Batman is able to foil with some fisticuffs the Scarecrow, and he and the DA again attempt to escape. And just when it seems like they are actually trapped, as Two-Face cornered them with a rather large gang of inmates, it's at that point that Batman ends up throwing one of the inmates into the crowd, grabs one of the inmates, throws him into the crowd, and shoots a grappling hook out and through a skylight in the asylum. And as they make their way to the exit, wouldn't you know it, just in time, the GCPD, Commissioner Gordon, and the rest of the mob show up at gunpoint to take care of the escaped convicts at that point. On the roof, however, Batman comes face to face. You have to have like a final boss in this episode, right? Like, Batman can't get off that easily. And wouldn't you know it, Judge Joker has made his way outside, and he manages to restrain Batman with a well-timed knotted rope, and he has it sort of hanging over one of the beams. So he's swinging back and forth as Batman hangs there, attempting to hit him with a cartoonishly large judge's gavel. And he unfortunately misses Batman a couple of times, or fortunately misses him a couple of times. Batman finally lays in a haymaker and is able to knock the Joker unconscious, which causes him to let go of the rope. And Batman and him begin hurling towards the ground. The Joker lands on one of the beams, and Batman is able to escape via another grappling gun. And that Batman picks up the Joker, and they swing away. And our sort of bookend to the episode is Batman and the DA sitting there discussing as the DA recovers, having a nice warm drink. And she mentions that she appreciates Batman. She recognizes that she was wrong about him, but she is working towards a city that doesn't need Batman. She will continue working towards a city that doesn't need Batman. And Batman concurs that he also will continue the same fight. And that's how we end our episode.
I see now there's a need for the things you do. But I'm still going to work toward a city that doesn't need Batman.
Me too.
Liam, give me your thoughts on plot for this legendary episode.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's so much fun. Again, this episode, just as a concept, is a lot of fun. We were talking a little bit off the air. I think it's mentioned in, it might be the Batman animated book. I know it's been stated other places that this idea of the villains of Gotham City putting Batman on trial in Arkham Asylum was the original idea for the first animated Batman the Animated Series movie, which obviously eventually became Mask of the Phantasm. And it is fun. It does feel like maybe, you know, we could talk about that in a minute of whether or not we think this could have worked as a feature length story or not. But just as it is, you could have just had the fun, because you only have a 22-minute story. You could have really just relied on just nothing but, hey, it's this guy. Look at all these villains, and they're here together, and all of that, and just kind of solely relied on that. The fact that, one, you make Janet a character that you care about, because at the start you open the episode with her and you understand why she is frustrated with the system, and with Batman in particular for not working within that system. And you see the downside of Batman being this masked vigilante who doesn't really answer to anyone, and how the juice is not worth the squeeze to her. Whatever good he does is outweighed by the frustration and the fact that all of these criminals who she thinks should be in jail end up back in Arkham with a better chance to escape and harm more people. As we said, it's one of the prototypical internet Batman arguments that folks tend to have about this character. And so to see her go on this journey, and as she sort of examines it, it's also cool because I think when she's making her arguments, as comedic and funny as that is, it's also very clear, like, she's a really good lawyer. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't, even though she's really just trying to buy time so Batman can figure out a way to escape, she's asking really poignant questions and arguing, you know, and letting the villains sort of collapse in on their own logic. So I really like that they took the time to make her a fully fleshed out character, because then you do care more, and it is rewarding at the end when she and Batman escape, and ultimately she makes this declaration that that Batman didn't create these villains. These villains created a need for Batman. And that ultimately that she, you know, she's come to respect him and understand his role. I think that's such a great little story. And the fact that you were able to fit that into this and still have time for all the fun gags and cameos that we talked about from all of these A-list top tier villains from the series, to do that all in one 22-minute episode. It's really impressive. I mean, obviously you have, as mentioned, Paul Dini and Bruce Timm are both credited as writers for this episode, with Mr. Dini doing the script. So it shouldn't be surprising, but the fact that you could basically, I mean, as you said, this character had appeared very briefly in one other episode, but she wasn't really anything other than just, you know, a face for Barbara Gordon's frustrations to kind of be taken out on when her dad's captured in that episode. So in this one, you basically have to start a character from scratch. You make her feel like a real person, and then you take her on this ridiculous journey with all of these crazy characters. And at the end, she's changed, and maybe Batman has come to understand and respect her side of the law as well. And it's just like it's a wonderful little journey, and the fact that they packed so much into a 22-minute cartoon is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great insight. I wholeheartedly agree with you. I guess it didn't dawn on me that you had to sort of introduce this character, establish who she was, do so in a way that didn't feel forced. Also, like it doesn't come off mm-hmm. as cliched in a way that, oh, of course it's the it doesn't feel like this is just like another anti-Batman, you know, police officer or somebody that's on the law enforcement side that doesn't care for Batman's way of doing things. Like
a blowhard like Bullock or somebody right. who's just shouting and waving her fist. Like, she has concrete reasons to not like Batman that we get to see.
Right. Precisely. Yeah. It could have very easily been just another one of those characters, and the fact that they were able to give this character dimension and depth in a small amount of time, and you get to see the transformation of the character from going from that to a, even though by the end of it she understands Batman, it's not so radically changed where she's like, all right, can't wait to work with Batman now. It's like, I'm still going to work so that you don't have to exist anymore.
Right.
Like, she sticks to what her original plan was, which also I feel like makes it less of a, would have been more cliched if they had just done that to the character. Like, oh, now mm-hmm. she's on Team Batman also. It's like, well, she understands. She doesn't blame him for the crime. She doesn't blame him for who these criminals are. However, she wants to make it so that he doesn't, he's out of a job. Like, she wants to put him out mm-hmm. of a job, which is great, because as Batman clearly aligns with that too. Like, he doesn't want to have to be that person either. So I agree with that. I, you know, this episode's so fun. It's the perfect amount of comedy in those very both literal and metaphorically dark scenes of Batman being put on this trial, and so much of it is that, you know, the comedy that balances out the real stakes that are had in those scenes. It's perfect. Like, it's perfect. I had no choice but to give it a 10 out of 10. It's such a great story. The fact that they were able to tell so much in a 22-minute episode also, as you said, is just remarkable. It didn't feel rushed. It didn't feel like there was a moment that was wasted or that was superfluous. Beggars can't be choosers. If this had been a two-part episode or a full-length movie, would there have been more memorable or enjoyable scenes. Maybe you stretch out some of the, you have more people come in and be witnesses, or you get more cameos from different characters. But for what they did, yeah, it's hard for me to not say that this episode is perfect as far as the plot is concerned. It's good. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I gave it the exact same score of 10 out of 10 for that reason. Yeah, I as like a thought exercise to consider what you could add if you had a two-parter or let alone a 70 or 80 minute movie to play with here. And you think, well, you could have lengthened out the trial a little bit more. Maybe you do a little bit more preamble with, a little bit more action in the first part and Batman catching Poison Ivy before the trial or something. And then maybe in part two, you could do more with Gordon Montoya, looking for Batman. Maybe you get Robin involved or something and they're all on the hunt trying to figure out what happened to Batman. But as it stands, this one is so perfect, and I would hate to, but as we said, it uses its time so efficiently that the risk of potentially adding in something that might come across as filler or not as good as what we got, I'm fine with leaving this alone as a 22-minute episode. Maybe this would be something down the line in, say, if we get 3, 4, 5 Robert Pattinson Batman movies, this would be one I would seriously look at as, could we make this a movie? Could we make this our, a plot of a full-length film at that point? Mm-hmm. But I think for this show and for what we got in such a relatively short amount of time, it's so perfect that I think stretching it out would potentially could lead to it being less perfect. And so I'd rather just leave it as is rather than going too far down the what if lane with what would happen if it were a longer story. So yeah, absolutely incredible. And just so much fun, if we didn't already say that enough.
Right. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be animation and visuals. And Dong Yang, as you mentioned, responsible for the animation, directed by Dan Reba, I believe you said.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Off the bat, I'm just going to say, animation in this episode was a struggle at times. One of the most glaring things to me was the mouth movement of certain characters.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of times where mouths were not moving and dialogue was happening, or vice versa, where dialogue was not happening and mouths were still moving. I don't know how much of that, like, who's responsible for that or what happened to, because usually it's, from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the dialogue is recorded and then the animation is done to match the dialogue as far as like character mouths moving and stuff like that. Like, it's
right.
That is the order in which things are done. So to me, unless they had to go back in and redub or re-record a whole bunch of lines for this episode for some reason, it doesn't, or they added dialogue, there doesn't seem to be any good reason why, or there, it doesn't seem to me that it's anybody but the animation team's fault as to why there are periods of time where dialogue is happening and mouths are not moving, or different. There's a scene where Harley is talking and the Mad Hatter's mouth is moving. So that's a struggle. That's a struggle for me. That stood out a lot because there's a lot of dialogue in this episode. It's very dialogue heavy. It's a courtroom drama for two-thirds of the episode, So you have a lot of dialogue happening. And there's a lot of those moments where it does not line up or the mouth doesn't move when dialogue is happening, which made me feel like I was watching like a dubbed anime or something like that. Like, it's, which is sort of alien when you're watching these episodes. So that, not good. The animation overall, there were some, definitely some things that felt, character models that felt a little bit off. The scene with Batman in the, I guess in the outside of the courtroom, where he gets ambushed by Harley and Ivy. He looks very odd. Like there's some weird, when he pulls out the tracking device, it's a, like, it's a very oddly animated Batman. I'll just say mm-hmm. that. Like he doesn't fit on any of the normal models that we're typically used to.
Yeah, we're almost trending towards, because he's got the super sharp square jaw.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've moved into that era where this latter half of the episodes, they were a lot more strict with that when it came to storyboards and then animation. There's less of the droopy nose Batman, or you know, a lot of the Dong Yang episodes, if you looked at it, like they did, I think I Am the Knight. And there's like that other kind of really broad square Batman with like with the longer swoop back ears. But it's not quite that one either. So yeah, it feels like it's the normal on model Batman, but with like the ears are a little too long. And then, yeah, it looks like, I don't know if things were sort of retaken later in the process. And so there, yeah, things are a little janky. I think Poison Ivy, who gets a lot of play in the first two acts, also looks just weirdly off model. Like her proportions, I feel like, change a lot in her head. Looks strange to me. Also, this is not necessarily a mistake so much as it is just a personal opinion. I've always thought it's weird that her one lip is a different color. I don't know if we ever talked about this, but her lower lip is a different color than her top lip.
I don't think we've ever talked about that. It's interesting.
Yeah, I just thought it was, I've always thought that's a strange choice. I don't think it's in every episode that she's in, but there's a couple where it is, and this is one of them. So
speaking of Ivy, that same scene that we were talking about, she has the wrist gauntlet on and shoots Batman in the back with the wrist mm-hmm. gauntlet, and then in the very next scene the wrist gauntlet has disappeared. It's just completely gone,
and she's like, suddenly in her regular outfit, because she's in like the dress of the statue, and then you cut away to Harley for a second, and then all of a sudden she's in her regular yeah. Poison Ivy outfit. Yeah, there's definitely some stuff here. I think the third act brings up the score for me personally.
Agreed.
Brings the score up a lot, because it's a lot of that shadows you talk about when the lights go out and Two-Face illuminates the line. So it's these very, very dark, minimal backgrounds with just this little bit of orange light from the lighter illuminating everyone, and you just see glimpses, and then you just see Harley back up, and then you just see Batman his silhouette appear behind her, and then she disappears into the shadow, and then they all turn around and the light hits Harley and she's upside down, as you mentioned, in the straight jacket. And some of the stuff of Batman fighting Croc in the dark is really, really cool. Yeah, the coloration in that whole sequence is great. And I think it is animated better, certainly, in that third act, and a little bit more, a little bit back to normal. But yeah, the first two acts, I think, especially the first act, as you mentioned, that scene on the rooftop where Batman gets captured, and then a lot of the actual trial portion of this episode, everybody looks a little bit off. And I think the actual animation itself, like when people are walking and stuff, just looks a little rigid and stiff. So, but again, that third act is a lot of fun. There's a couple other small visual moments I like during the trial when she's delivered her final argument and she just kind of goes over to Batman. She's like fidgeting with her glasses a lot in this episode,
mm-hmm.
just, I thought, kind of just a nice touch. And then she sort of takes them off and she sort of stares down, and then she just like puts her hand on Batman's shoulder and kind of smiles at him in the way that a, you know, an attorney might comfort a person on about to be sentenced to death row or something like that. I thought there's some nice little visual moments like that. And as I said, the third act, when we get all the action, you know, culminating in that bit with the Joker tying Batman up and swinging around with the giant gavel. Joker also does like a little wardrobe change. He has like the judge, like old timey headdress on, the mm-hmm. wig and
the powdered wig,
But then when they're about to seemingly kill Batman and they're in like the electroshock therapy room, he switched to like the big round hat, like he's like almost like a like an old time preacher or something.
He's got like an it's like an Undertaker
very hat, much thing crossover.
Right? But he's also got the he's got the collar on, like the priest collar on, and he's mm-hmm. using like an Irish accent as if.
Yes, I guess the idea is he's giving Batman his last rites, so that's why he's right. He's switched to a priest at this point. But yeah, there's right. So there's some fun to be had there. Yeah, Joker also in that in the trial, I think the. We've talked about this a lot. These BTAS original BTAS episodes. There's really not one consistent Joker model, and the eye shapes and things like that tend to change a lot from shot to shot almost. But yeah. So overall, I ended up settling on a 7 out of 10 because I do think that final act is fantastic. And is some of the coolest visual stuff in the whole series, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that sequence in the dark and the shadows with the lighter, as mentioned. But the general off-modelness and kind of the, like I said, just the kind of, I thought, as far as the actual movements of the characters in those first two acts, a lot of it's a little bit wonky, a little bit off. So I think this was trending down to like a 5 or a 4. And then that third act really, really saved the day. But yeah, it's a mixed bag for sure.
Yeah, I surprisingly, or unsurprisingly rather, don't disagree with you. I had a very similar thought when I saw some of this. It was like, man, this does not... This is trending real bad. This is like early season bad animation in some places. But yeah, that final sequence or the beginning of the third act with Batman in the room where they're about to unmask him. Everything about that, even the shot of the DA of Van Dorn throwing the batarang. I thought was animated pretty well. I love they kind of follow the batarang into the light. The light drops out. You kind of get the very edges of the characters are still lit so that you can kind of see what's going on. But obviously the darkness is implied, the pitch black darkness. And then the shot of Two-Face flicking the lighter on and kind of bringing the light into the room, which, by the way, inspired a friend of the show, George Kaltsoudis's print that he did not too long ago for that particular episode. Check that out on our social media feed this week. Just a tremendous piece. It's literally Two-Face,
the best,
the rest of the Rogues Gallery standing there. I'm blessed to be able to own a copy of the print. It's hanging up prominently in my house, and it's just a great piece, great composition done by friend of the show George. So check that out. But yeah, that I even love later on in that scene as the Joker has commandeered Scarface's Tommy gun at that point and is shooting it wildly. We get this one shot that this beautifully done panoramic of the Joker shooting the Tommy gun, and the light from the weapon firing is brightened up just his face, and we get this pan shot that's like almost like it's not quite 180, maybe like a 90 degree turn from the front of him to the side at profile, just done really, really beautifully. And then we get the shot of Croc getting electrocuted, which is extremely violent if you think about it. You know, this high voltage shocking situation happening. I did like the idea, even though he doesn't have any dialogue. We get Batman just running into the Scarecrow in the stairs. I thought that was a very good homage to a sort of a horror movie-esque type thing where he just sort of appears there holding this giant sickle and begins sort of lurching towards our heroes. As I already mentioned, the decapitation part for Scarface was great. really, really, really funny. I also liked how they did. We talked about it with friend of the show, Kevin Altieri, when we had him on in our bonus episode. If you want to check that out, we talked with Kevin Altieri about the Batman Adventures holiday special. And he talked about drawing crowds in that and how difficult that is in a comic book setting, and how I imagine in animation, it's the ante is upped because these characters are moving. So big crowds are typically not something they show a lot of detail in. So the idea that they had to kind of make this Arkham crowd feel large enough for Batman to be intimidated and to match sort of the noise that's coming from this riotous crowd. And they did so with just like silhouettes, essentially. Like you get some silhouettes with a little bit of cell shading and on some of the highlights. But it really does make the crowd feel large enough where you believe that it's a gigantic group of these criminals that are threatening Batman and the DA and keeping them hostage, where you don't have to worry about kind of filling in the details at times, because they're kind of in the shadows for the majority of it, kind of watching and observing as the court in the courtroom as the case takes place. So I really liked that. And then of course we already mentioned it. Some of our inmates at Arkham are definitely modeled after some of our those that worked on the show. I spotted a Bruce Timm lookalike, a Paul Dini lookalike. I'm pretty sure there was either a Butch Lukic or Eric, I think also an Eric Radomski lookalike.
Definitely saw Glenn Murakami in there. I believe Dan Riva himself, which would make sense as he's the director of the episode. But
yep, absolutely. Yeah, the whole gang was there pretty much. So a lot of those that you love it now, you can pick up on it and recognize that those guys, drawing themselves into the cartoon had some fun in doing so. That was great. I think even the final sequence of the Joker swinging the giant gavel was great. I love him adjourning the case as they take haul Batman off. Initially, he smacks down a rubber chicken instead of a gavel, just adding to the visual silliness of the whole song and dance. I will say it was very mysterious that the Riddler disappeared. He nowhere to be found for that third act. He just sort of slunk away. Maybe he just wasn't on board with the actual killing of Batman at that point. He thought that Batman deserved a fair trial, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, it's funny. There is a note. I think this is in, I think this was from Wikipedia, so take that as it will. But those things are actually sourced most of the time. Mm-hmm. Henry Pollack, who's the voice of Scarecrow in the original animated series, was recovering from some sort of throat surgery, I believe, which is why he is not voiced, despite having, Scarecrow has a pretty active role in this episode. So I also wonder if there was some kind of scheduling conflict for John Glover where they couldn't get him in. We can talk more about who is and isn't here in voice acting, but yeah, it is funny that he's there on the jury, but never says anything. And then for the final battle, he's nowhere to be found. So
very, very interesting.
Oh, and one last note would probably be the I believe it's the Skulls gang.
Yes.
That Batman captures. Looks like he's captured the Punisher. Like it's pretty much the exact Punisher skull logo on the guy's shirt.
It's a brief shot. They did it very subtly, very, very funny. Batman has captured Frank Castle himself and the potential leader of this gang. But if I didn't mention it, I actually ended up giving it the same exact score as you did, 7 out of 10. I definitely went back and forth. I feel like it could have gone anywhere between a 5 and a 7. But I think that's that final sequence, everything with the with from the time that the lights go out to the time that Batman is able to foil the Joker at the very end. I really enjoyed that. And it felt like it brought it up enough to deem it on the higher end of my score. Felt generous after that,
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. Harvey Cohen is responsible for our compositions this week. I gotta say, I don't think that there was a ton of moments where the music stood out, other than the one note that I had where I was like, oh, that's really good, was the culmination of them attempting to rip Batman's mask off. Mm-hmm. Everything sort of crescendos to that point where it really feeds into the tension of, oh my gosh, not only are the criminals about to kill Batman, they're going to humiliate him beforehand by unmasking him. They're going to know that he's Bruce Wayne. Even if he does somehow manage to get out of this, they're going to know. And then it's building. They're grabbing him by the cowl. You even see like the bridge of Bruce's nose come out of the cowl. And then we get the, you know, the batarang thrown by Janet Van Dorn into the light, which all sort of crescendos. And then the music stops in that moment, and then picks back up as Batman begins kind of picking them off. But
and now for the final confession, the big secret you've kept from us for so many years. Brothers and sisters, at long last, I give you the man behind the bat.
We do get the Joker theme played as mm-hmm. he's introduced as the Judge Joker. What did you have as far as musical notes for yourself?
Yeah, I think for me, maybe what was not necessarily surprising or not necessarily a bad thing, but that maybe they didn't lean into those villain themes more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have Poison Ivy, Harley, Joker, Two-Face, you know, Scarecrow, and even though they maybe are less memorable, you have Croc and Scarface and some of those guys as well. So the fact that they kind of went for more of, I guess they were trying to do like a court drama soundtrack for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little jazzier. It's a little bit, there's some percussion there. I don't know if they're going for like a people's court sequence at some point when the crowd's kind of getting rowdier and Scarface is shouting him down. There's some of that. I think that's quite a bit of fun. And then, yeah, as Batman and Janet are kind of that first sequence where they're being dragged away towards the electroshock room, as you mentioned, I think is pretty good. And then the music after he's taken down Croc and he sort of grabs Miss Van Dorn by the hand and leads her quietly out of the room, and then they're on the run and the inmates are after them. I think that's fun, leading to where they're running up the stairs and they see Scarecrow with that scythe. I think that's pretty fun. And then, as you mentioned, the music at the end with the Joker swinging around and all of that's pretty fun there. And yeah, of course, we get a little bit of the Batman theme brought in from time to time, especially in that sequence where he's where the lights go out and he's picking the villains apart one by one. You bring that in there and then kind of use that as your little crescendo at the end of the episode as Miss Van Dorn and Batman are having their little heart to heart. So yeah, I think there's a lot of good music. I guess just because I'm a sucker for a band playing the hits, I would have liked to have heard more of the villain themes used
yeah.
in there, and especially in that third act when they're, you know, and he's sort of facing off against them almost one by one. But still, I think it's a pretty fun soundtrack overall. And like I said, I like the kind of the courtroom drama feel they tried to give it in that second act. So I ended up settling on an 8 out of 10 for my music score.
Nice. Yeah. I went just one tick lower. Actually, I went to 7 out of 10. Yeah, I think it would have been, you know, if maybe they were a little more subtle and I just missed it. I feel like maybe there was a little bit of the Poison Ivy theme, maybe infused in that scene with, where they capture Batman, but maybe I'm imagining things. But it wasn't overt enough where I was like, yeah, this is great. I love the Joker theme that was used. It's used, as I said in the introduction, yeah, it would have been nicer to have it. It's a good soundtrack overall, though. I think it does what it needs to. And I think for me, that highlight of the near unmasking, I think was enough to give still a pretty strong score.
Absolutely.
All right, William, let's wrap things up here. We'll be here for a while because of the rather large size of the cast. Of course, we're going to go through here and talk about our voice cast. Lots of memorable and notable names here from the usuals. Plus a new voice cast member for replacing our original actress for the DA here, but with a last name that we might recognize.
That's right. So just quickly, we have Bob Hastings as Commissioner Gordon and Leanne Shermer as Montoya. I said there's not a lot for them to do in this episode, but they are along for the ride. And then, yes, as mentioned here, one of the person who has the most dialogue of anyone in the episode is none other than Stephanie Zimbalist. And if that last name sounds familiar, as Cal referenced, that's because she is none other than the daughter of the voice of Alfred, Ephraim Zimbalist. And ironically, they picked an episode that her father wasn't acting in. so she didn't actually get to share a recording studio with him. But
I did see on, I don't know if you were about to point this out, so apologies if I'm about to step on your toes, but at least on the DCAU wiki, they claim that she and the late Kevin Conroy both went to Juilliard at the same time. So she does get to play off of somebody, even though she doesn't get to play off her father in any bits here. She does get to play off with somebody that she was quite familiar with.
Absolutely. And like her father and like Kevin, she has a real knack for this. She does have a recognizable voice. I couldn't necessarily pinpoint the exact things, but when I was looking at her, I was like, okay, yeah, that's a voice I've heard a few times before. I think she did this is very specific to those of you who may have been raised in religious or Christian households, but she definitely did some voices on Adventures in Odyssey, which is a Christian radio drama back in the day, and did some other voice work as well as a lot of stage and screen work, unsurprisingly, based on her pedigree as an actor and her skills here. But yeah, she's fantastic because again, she has the most heavy lifting to do as an actor, having to go from the crusading district attorney who's giving these sort of, you know, condemning, sweeping statements about how Batman doesn't belong in Gotham City and he's making her job harder and everything. And then the kind of the quieter moments, as mentioned, on her little date with Bruce, and then all the way through to being the lawyer, to being the... you know, to kind of ferociously defending her client, that being Batman. And then, as we said, having this sort of genuine change of heart by the end and her and Batman kind of agreeing that they should both work together, to make a Gotham where Batman doesn't need to exist anymore. She's fantastic. She's very good. Again, as you said, maybe not surprisingly based on her skill as an actor in Juilliard, and then obviously grew up in an acting family, but she's tremendous, and I really enjoyed her playing off of all of these wacky characters, but obviously she has probably the most to do with Kevin Conroy himself.
Yeah, it's really strong. She has a lot to do. She interacts, as you mentioned, with not only the largest and most important cast member in DCAU and Batman the Animated Series with Kevin Conroy, but she also plays off of Mark Hamill's the Joker. We get her and a bunch of these classic rogues gallery voices, in Two-Face and Poison Ivy. And
yeah, I'm a sucker for anytime pacing something to do too. I just think he's so fantastic as Gordon, and a lot of times, again, that maybe comes down more due to time of it just being 22 minutes. He's a lot of times in these later episodes is just kind of there to give exposition. So that scene they have together where they're kind of arguing back and forth about what Batman should be, and he's sort of, you know, pounding his fists on the desk, and it's a war zone out there, and Batman's our best bet to turn the tide, sort of thing. I love their back and forth because, again, neither one of them is really wrong in that case, and they're both good people who want Gotham to be a better place, but they're coming at it from these different sides. So yeah, I liked her playing off Bob Hastings a lot too.
Yeah, that's really good. No, Bob Hastings has some good dialogue, as you mentioned. He has the the responsibility of communicating that he's fully Team Batman. He's not going to waver from that. He lives, eats, and breathes this sort of firsthand interaction with these criminals that Miss Van Dorn perhaps doesn't have the doesn't quite get the same perspective on. So yeah, his passion definitely comes through in their bits of dialogue there. So yeah, she plays off of everybody that she has to in, you know, really, really well. You know, Richard Mall as Two-Face, you know, their interactions are great, because of course you have the former district attorney facing off the current district attorney. So you have some great, it's a great interplay there between the two of them. And of course, you know, Richard Mall's deep Two-Face voice coming off and mm-hmm. and her softer, feminine, but still strong way of communicating. She does a great job. And I think the interactions that she has benefited from somebody that had such strong acting chops and clearly was comfortable behind the mic.
Absolutely. Yes. A great job by Ms. Zimbalist, as mentioned, but yeah, because we have so many, I'll give the names rapid fire. A lot of our who's who of Batman rogues here. We of course have Mark Hamill as the Joker, Arlene Sorkin as Harley Quinn, as you mentioned, Richard Mull as Two-Face, Aaron Kincaid as Killer Croc, Diane Pershing as Poison Ivy, George Zunza as both Ventriloquist and Scarface. And really, he's only in, like, he doesn't get a lot of dialogue, but you know who I really thought was the scene stealer is Roddy McDowall as Mad Hatter in this episode. just being like, he kind of introduces the concept, and then the interaction that he and Ms. Zimbalist have as he's you know, waxing poetic about how Batman cost him his great love, and then she very calmly points out that he could have just respected her wishes and left her alone. And he immediately flies off the handle into this psychotic rage. I just thought Mr. McDowell was so good in a brief outing. A lot of these characters, other than really Joker and maybe to a lesser extent Two-Face and Harley, that, you know, they're all elbowing each other for screen time because of, again, it's only 22 minutes, but yeah, I really appreciated Mr. McDowell, especially, I think.
Yeah, I agree. He's great. I would also give a runner up to George Zunza, who's again, you know, has the duty of playing both the Ventriloquist and Scarface. Ventriloquist doesn't get a whole lot of dialogue, but does get a little bit here and there. I love when the Ventriloquist gets hit and Scarface laughs about him getting hit. That's great. And then of course, when Scarface gets decapitated, his head bounces down the stairs, he makes like the grunts as the head bounces down the stairs.
And we get his catchphrase, "I'm hit, boys."
So good. We'd be remiss not to mention the fact that Killer Croc's obsession with killing Batman with a rock once again gets brought up as they're shouting things as Batman is let in, and his main line of dialogue is of course that he wants to kill him with a rock. So that running joke continues here. Gotta love that. I guess that probably leads us to our main event. Of course, Arlene Sorkin gets some great lines, as we mentioned.
I don't know if we mentioned this. This is the first on-screen mention that Harley was a doctor at Arkham Asylum before she met Joker.
Mm-hmm.
So a fun little bit of trivia here if you're looking for the first on-screen mention of that. But yeah, that sequence there where she's, you know, she's Joker is literally in her lap and she, you know, she's fawning over him. And then Janet lets her know that he tried to turn her in exchange for a lighter sentence for himself. And she immediately just snaps and just grabs him by his collar and starts shaking him. And again, as we talked about, sort of the Looney Tunes style fake cussing that she takes as Croc is pulling her off and taking her away. She has the great stuff here, not surprisingly. And then Yeah, of course, the ending there with the Joker, I really enjoy. Of course, Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy getting to bounce off each other is always great. But he also throws in, which I believe this is a Sammy Davis Jr. reference, Here Comes the Judge. I think this was like a character he played. But yeah, I think that's a very fun
scene. He also gets the Porky Pig. That's all, folks.
That's right.
Warner Brothers synergy going on there. He's also, we didn't talk about visuals, but he's reading some sort of comic also. I didn't see that notated in the notes as if it was some sort of homage to something, but he's definitely reading some cartoon comic that maybe a nod to like one of those like Jerry Lewis or little Jerry Lewis or something like that comics.
Yeah, usually it's Tiny Toons, but I don't think it was in this case.
It was not. Yeah, but before we get into our scores here, let me just for voice acting. Well, we'll continue talking. Mark Hamill's great, like unsurprisingly, really good, really, really great. Really funny, has a lot of funny dialogue, has a lot of deadpan, a lot of like mugging for the camera, essentially. As I mentioned, the one where the part where Mad Hatter asked him to strike it from the record, I had to pause it because I was laughing so hard. It's so good. Wait, somebody's supposed to be writing this down?
Outstanding.
So good. Yeah, he's got, I love later when Ventriloquist, he, as I said, he commandeers the Scarface's Tommy gun and he's shooting it and at Batman in the dark. And the Ventriloquist or Scarface exclaims that he's going to shoot Croc. He says, "What's your point?"
The only way out is through me. You'll hit Croc. What's your point? Watch where you're shooting, clown.
It's incredible.
It's great, incredibly written dialogue. Like, kudos to the writers for just some great, incredible dialogue. But also, no one else is going to pull off and make that so incredibly funny as Mark Hamill does.
Just as we talk once in a while about something that sticks with us, not so much because it's in the episode, but because it was used in a lot of ads and promos after it aired. And the Two-Face shouting, Richard Mull's Two-Face shouting, "Nobody panic," followed by Joker saying, after they all see Harley strung up, saying, "Okay, start panicking." That was used in about a million. I think that was still being used once it switched over to Kids WB.
Yeah.
It's that one's burned into my brain.
So good.
For sure.
So good. And then I don't know if you want to talk, of course, about the main event, the late great Kevin Conroy, of course, doesn't have, because the episode is so sort of overshadowed by all of the supporting cast, we don't get a ton. We get his Bruce Wayne. I feel like there's almost more Bruce Wayne dialogue than we do Batman dialogue. But we mentioned his chemistry with Miss Imblist is great. His sort of initial butting of heads felt very much like a Batman versus somebody that's anti-Batman, whether it's Harvey Dent or in later series, you know, in World's Finest Superman or whoever, you know, somebody that clearly isn't a fan of his. He's not a fan of theirs. They're not a fan of him. But by the end of the episode, as we mentioned, I love the part where he just sort of leans over in the middle of this sham of a trial. And she's like, "This is nuts." And he's like, "Just keep going," like knowing that she has to stall for time. You know, you can see through Mr. Conroy's performance, you see Batman sort of warming up and recognizing that, yeah, they're on the same team. He needs her in this moment in order to be able to stall for enough time. So he's going to do everything he can to try and like get on the same page as her. So I think that's communicated well through the dialogue. We get, and of course we get a little bit of verbal sparring at the end between him and Mark Hamill's Joker. So that's always welcome as well. But really, really good, unsurprisingly, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So after we've just talked for the last little bit here, I don't know how my score could be anything other than another 10 out of 10.
Yeah, it's a who's who. It's the all-star cast. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about this when we reviewed Almost Got Him with best friend of the show, Monica Gubina. Like, mm-hmm. when you have all, it's the show. It's everybody that needs to be in an episode, and they're all on their A game. They're all delivering iconic lines. They're all interacting with each other. It's the stuff that when it happens, you appreciate it so much more. So it's really strong. 10 out of 10 for myself as well. I don't know how anybody could be a fan of this show and not give a perfect score for that. Before we give our final scores for the episode, I did have a fantasy question for you. So mm-hmm. we have quite the roster here and quite the memorable lines and guests. If, let's just say, this ended up turning into a movie, so you have longer runtime, meaning you have more characters. Who would be the one character that you would have liked, one villain that you would have liked to have seen involved in this, whether as a witness or in some portion of the trial? This will also be our Spotify exclusive question this week. So nice. If you're listening on Spotify, go to the episode and give us your feedback as to who you liked to have seen as a villain that was not involved in the trial already.
Gosh, that's tough. Cause I'm gonna, even though he doesn't speak, I'm going to count Riddler as being there. So he's out.
Technically there. Yes.
So I will not pick him, even though he's like the glaring obvious one. That
and I should also mention that the clue that leads Batman to the roof, while it is sort of a riddle, it is also somewhat visibly resembles Wormwood, the character from the Cape and Cowl conspiracy. Maybe he was involved in this. We don't know. We know that he went to Arkham, I believe. So maybe he was involved with it or not, but I don't think that counts. So if that's your guy, go ahead and pick it.
No, I think I would throw maybe a little bit of a wild card. We never see him again. Let's get Maxie Zeus in here.
Oh,
what a ridiculous, like how ridiculous and fun could that have been if you're putting the guy who thinks he's the literal Zeus on the witness stand to talk about Batman and how he thinks Batman is Hades and all of that.
Man, that is perfect. That honestly, that was the one that came to mind for me. Like that would have been perfect. if we're going in a different direction though, man, you know, Freeze doesn't make sense because Freeze, you know, it doesn't make sense for him to be there. So you can't go with Mr. Freeze. Bane hasn't been introduced yet. You already have Harley, you have your whole main cast there. I really think you're spot on. I think Maxie Zeus is the one that makes sense, unless you're going to do something like Sid the Squid or like one of those one-off characters that, and I can't imagine he went to Arkham Asylum. He probably went to one of the prisons if he went when he was he let out. So I as far as the criminally insane, I think the only one that you're really missing would be Maxie Zeus, which would have been great. He could have delivered quite the soliloquy from the from the stand there about the whole cast of characters. So that definitely would have been a welcome and fun one to include for sure. All right, Liam, well, let's total up. Whoa. Before we continue, that of course is our bonus point sound, and that means that we have a bonus point here that would be from myself. I'm gonna give a bonus point, Liam, to the title card, because boy oh boy, it's just another one of those that I love seeing right off the bat. You get the Lady Justice, you get Trial comes across the screen, and you immediately know what episode you're about to see. Like, there's no doubt in my mind we're about to see, oh yes, it's one of the best. I love the title card. We've done a lot of discussion recently over on Twitter at DCAU Review about a lot of artwork and different things. And I know you specifically talked about it, like how I think we bring it up here at least once a year on the show. So how there isn't like a coffee table book collected edition of all of the title cards is beyond me. I love to this day that they're so iconic and they're still so closely associated with that. The, as we mentioned, the continuing Batman, the Adventures Continue comic book series is even giving homages to them this season with variant covers that are homages to those. A friend of the show, Jordan Gibson, also did their own version of the title card, released it on their Twitter in the past couple weeks. So I love the title cards. This one sticks out to me as one of those that is just iconic in my brain and just perfectly matches. It says everything you need to know about the episode here. You got the mm-hmm. Lady Justice coming out of the darkness, and then the word trial across the screen immediately invokes, like, what am I going to see? If you're seeing it for the first time, it's like, ooh, what am I going to see here? If you're watching it for the 100th time, like we did tonight, it's like, yes, we're getting down to business here. So absolutely love it.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's I love that, that is a bonus point. Yes. We often talk about how much that adds to the visual identity of the show, and yeah, it's absolutely worthy of one. So I love that inclusion.
All right, Liam. Well, wrapping everything up here with my final scores, I come up with a 35 out of 40, meaning we're just I just ended up a point shy of this being in our top picks. So really good, but not a top pick for me. What about you?
Yeah, and unsurprisingly, you would have been, I believe, 1 point lower, but your bonus point puts you into a tie with my score, which was also a 35 out of 40.
Do we need to debate rewatchability? It's great.
Oh, it's one of the, like you said, I think right at the top of the show, you really hit the nail on it. It's one of the episodes where if you watch this as a kid, or you know, you watched it through, but it's been a while, when you're thinking about, oh, what are the best episodes, or what are the most memorable episodes, more importantly, because you know, doesn't always mean the best ones. Like, I wouldn't necessarily put this up against like I Am the Night, or you know, or It's Never Too Late, or some of those really gripping character drama episodes. Mm-hmm. But it's so much fun and it's so memorable because you get, you know, there's only a few times in the series that you get, you know, there wasn't a Gotham City Legion of Doom. We didn't see these characters get to interact too often with each other. So just the fun and the novelty of seeing Joker and Two-Face and Croc and Harley and Poison Ivy and all these characters playing off of each other is so much fun. And then, yeah, you add in that it's actually a great story told from the point of view of this crusading district attorney and how she kind of comes to terms with what Batman's role is in the city. Like, yeah, this is incredible. This is one of the best of the series, even if it's the best for a completely different reason than, like we said, some of those smaller, more character-driven episodes are. This one still has some really great character beats, and it's also just it's just so much fun.
yeah, I'm with you. Nothing to add. Definitely two thumbs up for this one. And if you haven't watched it already, stop what you're doing right now. Go watch the episode. Loads of fun. Or if you haven't seen it in a while, maybe this is the day that you go back and check it out. It's definitely worth it. All right, Liam, let's begin to wrap things up here. Thank you everybody for tuning in this week. Thank you so much. We love hearing your thoughts on this episode. Tweet us at DCAU Review or comment on our posts on Instagram at DCAU Review. We'd love to hear your thoughts, your individual scores for these episodes. We love hearing people's scores. That's one of the great things that we get to interact with, and a lot of our fans do that on Instagram. So give us your feedback. What did you think of this episode? What did you think of the individual categories? You know, did you feel like we were a little too harsh with the animation? Do you feel like we were spot on with that? Give us your thoughts. Interact with us. Join the conversation. Do that over at Twitter and Instagram. As I mentioned before, if you're listening to us on Spotify, which is just one of the many podcast apps that you can listen to the podcast on, there are exclusive questions and polls that you can interact with us there. Give us your thoughts. Who would you like to have seen? Are we missing somebody here? Would you like to have seen them shoehorn the Penguin in, even though he's not criminally insane? Would you have shoehorned him into the episode somehow if we had a longer runtime? Give us your thoughts. who's that that missing piece that could have been added from the Rogues Gallery that would have been an interesting addition to the trial here over at Spotify. If you're listening to us on any of the other podcast apps, including Spotify, we'd love to get a 5-star review from you. And if you have the option to leave a little paragraph or blurb, tell people what you love about the episode and the podcast, we would greatly appreciate that. We've gotten a couple of those reviews recently on Apple Podcasts, and thank you for those that have left kind words and told people that are potentially checking us out what it is that you enjoy about the podcast. That helps us out a lot. We appreciate that. Don't forget, if you want to support us in a couple other different ways, monetarily, you can click on the link at the bottom of the podcast to link to our anchor site, anchor.fm/DCAU review. You can donate to us directly if you wish to support us and buy myself and Liam a coffee. You can also, of course, head over to dcaureview.com, click on the shop tab, or just check out the show notes. There's a link to our shop tab there, and you can pick out a shirt or a mug or a hat if you want to support the podcast that way. There's always sales going on, so I encourage you that if you are looking to support the podcast, wait till you see a sale. They happen like once every couple of weeks, if I had to guess. Mm-hmm. So there's usually a coupon or a sale code at the top if you check that out. Of course, Liam, we are going to be continuing here in the month of February with more Batman reviews. So we have another one coming up next week, as we are apt to do. We continue here in the order of production. So why don't we talk about what the next episode we'll be reviewing is then?
Absolutely. So we have we go from really one of the, like we said, the all-time classic episodes of the series, to one that I would say is also memorable, but maybe isn't thought of as an all-time classic, and that is the episode Avatar. Not to be confused with the James Cameron vehicle.
We should have lined this up for when Avatar.
I know. We really missed a chance for some synergy there.
Some hashtag thievery. I don't know what you call that when you link things up in an attempt to appeal to common hashtags at the time. But anyway, we'll talk about the non-blue people Avatar next week.
That's right. It's going to be interesting. It's not the Airbender either. We should know.
We really need things named Avatar. Yeah, it's also not like the thing that is your dubs as your picture and on like video games either.
Correct.
Not one of those. We'll talk about what Avatar is, though, next week. Very excited to cover that episode as we get to the return of Ra's al Ghul to the DCAU here, and an episode that I don't remember a whole lot about because I haven't seen it a whole lot. So it'll be like I'm watching a fresh episode.
I don't know that I've seen this episode more than maybe 2 times.
We'll see if we should watch it more or less next week. Looking forward to doing that. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.